Welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. We're just going to hit you with a quick intro on this one. But first of all, thank you for being here. It's good to have you. Good to have like-minded people on one spot. Here we are, just a family.
Thanks for joining in.
We're here on this podcast together.
How's it having going? A couple brewskis.
Yeah, you're happy. We're happy. Hunting season's kicking off.
One big happy family is what it is.
It is. It's
look
just,
at us.
Just a bunch of working class people just look looking at each other.
Hanging out.
Singing Kumbaya, you know.
Just whatever we do, you know, after work. You know. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying safe. I'm glad to have you. We're going to cut right to some business very quickly, and then we have a veteran shout-out, and then we're going to jump right into the goods. So we do appreciate you being here. We appreciate all the messages, the comments, reaching out saying you like the show, what you like about us, what you hate about us. Thank you. It helps. It all helps.
The podcast, and we love you.
We do love you.
We do love you.
Even if you don't love us, we love
appreciate
you.
Appreciate you.
The podcast is presented by HHA Sports, and that is single pin sights and drop-away rests with a lifetime warranty and a company that's American-made and supports our veterans. What else can you ask for? If you are interested in single-pin sights, we have a code for you to save some coin to get into your first single-pin sight, or if you just want to upgrade or whatever you're into. WCB15 at HHASports.com. Save yourself a little bit of money. Try them out. We're all shooting the HHA Tetra and the HHA Tetra Max. Love it. And we're all shooting the Virtus drop-away rest.
Love it.
So check that out.
Drop away.
Wisconsin-based company. Super proud to have that partnership. Podcast also brought to you by Scent Crusher, keeping us scent-free from the gear bag to whatever you want out of the Scent Crusher arsenal. The new Halo series is out.
Big fan.
Highly recommend checking them out. We run the room clean every podcast before and after every podcast because, hey, you know, Greeks like beer and
three dudes in here.
And sweaty working guys. You know, it is what it is. You know, but Scent Crusher, check them out.
Well, Scentcrusher.com.
Yeah, Doug doesn't get sweaty, but. Yeah,
Doug's polo has got a little bit of sweat stain. So yeah. Yeah, it's all right. Eric and I smell like weld splatter and gear oil. It's all right, though. Scent Crusher helps us with that.
I smell like a keyboard.
Podcast also.
Keyboard and Mountain Dew.
Brought to you by Leupold Optics. And we don't really need to go into that because that's what this whole episode is about, is Leupold. But a great company. They gave us a chance. Great people there. Check them out. Hope you enjoy the show.
Great products, too, by the way.
It will make you think twice about what you're using for binos or scopes or spotting scopes. Just hope you enjoy this episode. It'll be fun. It goes into all that. Also, Gator Outdoors. Code WCB10. Gator is a lifestyle brand and a retailer. Right now, this year, we are all rocking True Timber camo that we all got through Gator Outdoors. Mm-hmm. And you can get that with the Gator logo printed or the Working Class Bowhunter logo printed on it. Super affordable camo and clothing and a great looking camo pattern. They have a couple different options. We're rocking the Strata. Eric, you on the antelope hunt, what were you wearing? I can't remember the name of the
Real Tree.
Real Tree. We're talking True Timber.
True Timber, bro.
What's mine called then?
Venati or
Yeah, something like that.
I can never say the name right. Yeah. Ask Jeremy from Buckstorm because he always made fun of me.
Oh, because you can never say it?
Yeah, because I couldn't say it right.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. I like the Strata. It's a great looking camo.
Does look good.
Podcast also brought to you by Old Barn Taxidermy. And right now, if you're a working class listener, and you are if you're here, if you shoot a critter and you take it to Old Barn Taxidermy, and they have many outposts so you can drop off and get your mount and critter to Old Barn, and they also have a Colorado location. If you get your mount to Old Barn and say, hey, working class bow hunter sent me, they'll go, oh, really? They'll put you in a drawing out of our listeners and draw a free mount out of that pot for next season. So if you kill a deer, you take it to Old Barn. Hey, I'm a working class listener. They sent me. They put you in a special working class listener's pot. They draw that at the end of the year. You get a free shoulder mount next year if you win.
Boom.
Pretty cool. There's like I said before, there's only like 10 people to listen to the show. So you could have like a 1 in 10 chance of getting a free shoulder mount.
You got a good chance of winning a mount.
Yeah, great odds.
We know there's a couple people already that have mounts in at Old Barn under the working class pot. So
get on
in there and be a part of that. You know, 1 in 10 chance, but it might go up. You know, Old Barn's going to skyrocket us into that next download realm. And then you got to compete with like a million people that are have shoulder mounts.
So get in now, basically.
Yeah, I mean.
Get in while it's hot.
Come on, silly.
Be cool.
Doug, you got a veteran shout out?
I do. This was submitted by Charity Angry, and the veteran name is Matthew Angry, and I appreciate the pronunciation.
Their last name is Angry?
Yeah. It just says in parentheses, like pissed off, so I appreciate that.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's a cool last name, actually.
The branch is the Army, And it says, we both started listening to the podcast last week after he got a new Matthews after not shooting for 8 years. We drove the truck around the road, so we listened 10 hours a day as of now to catch up. He's loving the podcast and learning a lot. He's never been deer hunting. We love the way you guys talk. It makes us feel like he's around the guys and he's known forever. He served from 2010 to 2014 and enlisted at 17 years old. He was stationed in Alaska before his deployment, and he got to go on a grizzly hunt. While deployed, he was shot and ended up breaking his back shortly after that, and he was medically retired due to his injuries. Hasn't been able to hunt since because of that. After changing careers recently and a lot of pain subsiding, he's finally ready to get back and hunt this year. So,
no kidding.
Good luck. Thank you for your service.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for your service, man.
It's a hell of a story, man.
Yeah, that's unfortunate to hear, but dude, you know, you're way more brave than any of us in here.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, shit.
I appreciate that. What was the name? Angry is all I remember.
Matthew Angry.
Dude, thank you so much for your service, man. I hope you have good luck and get out there.
I think you might kill something. I don't know.
Reach out.
Is the mustache mustache
tingling? I hate to start predicting it already, but
is it tingling?
It is getting that time.
Oh, it is.
I wonder, we'll have to get back in contact with him. I wonder if we could hook them up with like Accessible Hunter and get some tips or like equipment advice or something like that to help him out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Well, check that out. Thank you so much for your service, man. We appreciate it. We wish the best of luck to you this season, man. I definitely think you're going to get after it. You're going to have fun no matter what. So reach
Cheers,
out.
Brother.
Stay in contact. Cheers to you, sir. Thank you so much for your service. If you would like to submit a veteran shout out, go to workingclassbowhunter.com, hit the contact tab, and there is a form there for a veteran shout out. So thank you for that. Thanks, guys. The Angries, coolest last name probably. The Angry family. You guys are awesome. I would imagine you're probably not that angry. You're probably
They're probably great, but
great.
It's a great last name.
Sweet last name for sure. Anyway, hope you enjoy this one. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for supporting us on every level. And I was going to say we couldn't be more thankful, but I already said that like 100 times. Hope you enjoy.
I'm Chase Rolson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is the podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T-Bone Turner from the Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
Welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. This week we have from Oregon, Michael from Loophole. That's me avoiding his last name. What's up, man?
How you doing?
I'm good. Hopefully you're doing well out there. So for people don't know this in podcast land, I wasn't going to bring it up, but I'm going to. We tried to do this podcast a couple weeks ago. You left for an elk hunt. We left for an antelope hunt. And you had shitty service because of fires and like Oregon's like falling off into the ocean or something like that.
Yeah, let's hope not.
He even told you how to say his last name. You still screwed it up.
Yeah, I said, I'm going to avoid that.
Yeah, I'll send it to you phonetically spelled. That way maybe you can remember. Who knows?
Yeah, I'll just use my Hooked on Phoenix to figure it out.
There you go. That's right.
So what's up in Oregon, man? I know a lot of crazy stuff's going on. You guys are surviving. Just an outdoor company in a liberal area.
Yeah, well, if it's not that, then it's the weather, like you said, and the fires. But thankfully, we're back. We had about maybe 10 days of insanity with the fires and the smoke and all that lingering and stuff. But we're back to blue skies and kind of warm, actually. But yeah, good air quality and things are kind of quiet downtown, I think. But I don't know. I don't stay in touch with what's going on.
Try to avoid that as much as possible.
I don't blame you.
That's right. Yeah.
You guys have Portland. We have Chicago, except you guys are more in Portland than we are in Chicago. That's so true. We feel for you there. Well, that's good to hear, man. Yeah. I was pretty concerned seeing just everything going down with the fires last time we talked, and it just was not good. And that's one thing in Illinois and Iowa and the Midwest we do not have to worry about is wildfires like that. And I don't know. It's, I'm sure a lot, sometimes you need them. Like, it's probably necessary for certain areas out there, but then it's scary once it starts getting to people's homes.
Well, when it's back, you know, when it's out east, you know, on the other side of the mountains, it's mostly just sage and grass and, you know, juniper out there. So it's not, you know, you don't have a, obviously a heavily populated area. So it blows through that stuff pretty quickly, and they can usually contain it pretty good. And, you know, the closer it gets to the mountains here, then it starts running into a lot of timber, and then you start having bigger issues. And, of course, on this side, on the west side of the mountains, there's a lot more, you know, people living, and that's where it really gets crazy. And that, all those fires basically were all in, like, you know, fairly highly populated areas, or affecting some highly populated areas up and down the I-5 corridor. So yeah, it was nuts. And then, you know, right after the finally, you know, smoke and everything like that, and the fires were out and smoke was still lingering, and we had 2 or 3 days of really heavy rain, a couple inches of rain. Well, what came with that was thunder and lightning, which we never get on this side of the mountains, hardly. And, yeah, it reminded me of, you know, growing up back in your area. I mean, it was rattling the windows and just, you know, it was crazy. But thankfully we had enough rain that it didn't start more fires after that.
I'll say that, because a lot of the causes of wildfires is lightning, ain't it?
Correct, yeah, yeah. And lightning strikes and then, you know, off it goes. But again, it's rare for that to happen on the west side of the Cascades here. So that was crazy.
That is crazy, man. So when you say, like, you're originally from Wisconsin, so that's what you kind of referenced earlier. So yep. You're a Midwest boy at heart. You know, you're one of us, yep. But you're out west. So how did that happen?
Yeah, it's kind of a roundabout way. You know, I kind of went from Wisconsin. You know, you get out of school, out of college, and you're trying to find jobs, and, you know, nothing's really happening around there. And so, you know, I went to Texas because I had been there quite a bit growing up with, you know, friends and family down there, and worked down there for about 10 years. And it was just so hot, I just couldn't deal with it, you know. I gotta get out of here. I mean, I, you know, obviously my wife's from Texas, so I met her down there. It wasn't all bad, but yeah, so I got an opportunity to move north, and you know, it was Portland, and we jumped on it, and been here since, I guess, 95, so quite a while, almost as long as I was in Wisconsin. So
So you're basically an Oregon native at that point.
Well, I guess I, you know, close, pretty close. You know, you guys would call me a Westie, I guess.
I was just going to get to it. We talked on the phone earlier today. You're like, I fit the height description for a Westie. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I wasn't going to say it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely a height challenge, but
you guys are more mobile out there through the hills. It doesn't pay off to be full of Bush Light and Casey's Pizza and hit the mountains.
Yeah, probably not.
That's fun. So. Well, cool. So let's talk about Loophole, man. You work at Loophole. That's how basically we got to conversating. Invited me on that hunt. It would have been heck about a year ago this week, roughly. You didn't get to go on the hunt, unfortunately, but we went with a good dude, Lucas Bird, out there, and a couple of other good, Loophole influencers would be the term for it, but great people, awesome camp. I got to come out and see the facility, meet a lot of the employees, and to say that I was so impressed with everything that goes on at Loophole and the people that work there, and kind of just like the atmosphere that you guys have built with your employees and the workspace, and everyone's passionate and really good at what they do. I felt very low end when I was there because everybody there is so good at their job. It seems very passionate and friendly and just down to earth. So it was cool to like get the factory tour and talk to people and meet everybody. So Juan, thank you for kind of introducing us into that world. And it was refreshing to meet everybody and kind of see the atmosphere you guys live in.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd say that it doesn't take far to get away from the Portland area, you know, and you got, it's all people like what you relate to on your podcast and everything. I mean, Loophole's full of blue collar people and people that are passionate about hunting and shooting. And, you know, not everybody there does it, but the vast majority of people do participate in one or the other, or both. When you can share your passion, you know, as in your day job, to go out and play around with some of the stuff you work on, you know, away from that, that's a great, you know, it's a great opportunity, I guess.
Yeah, and absolutely. Your guys' products are obviously top notch. And being from the Midwest, being whitetail hunters first and foremost, optics isn't something that always played a and I don't know what term I'm looking for. It wasn't always like the number one necessity at the front line of what we do over here. But I feel as the more experience I get and the more I learn about optics and realize how important they are and your arsenal of tools, I depend on my optics now more than ever. If I don't have my loopholes hooked to me and my binocular harness when I hit the woods, I feel absolutely lost. I feel naked.
I feel lost without mine when I go shoot a target in the backyard. I have to have them glued to me.
Agreed. They are with me and my rangefinders. Like for a bow hunter, it's a necessity, especially someone who hunts with like a single pin sight like all of us. Binos are right there, rangefinders hooked on the side of them, ready to go at all times. I feel like it makes us better hunters and more accurate shots with ranging quick. You know, it's just right
like
there.
If I even think I see a deer in the woods, I'm automatically reaching for my binos. Automatically.
I was going to say, remember growing up, like, you had your whatever bow, and then you had, like, this piece of shit Walmart binoculars that, like,
monocular?
They never worked.
Yeah.
You couldn't see shit out of them.
Well, that's just it. Can you imagine how much stuff you missed all those years?
Yeah, exactly.
Binoculars with you? You know, I mean, now it's a case of FOMO, you know? It's like, if I don't have my binos, I can't see through those trees very well with my naked eye, but as soon as I throw up my binos, also now I can kind of look past all those
trunks. I saw a buck, like, well, how big was it? Like, I don't know. I couldn't see it.
Right, yeah.
I saw a rack.
I saw his frame, and that's it. Well, yeah, now it's kind of, it's taken my whitetail hunting to the next level. Like last year I saw a buck breed a doe through the trees that I wouldn't be able to see with my naked eye, but because I could see better.
You could see movement, but
helps you judge animals from a distance. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is all stuff. It's sad, but some people started out using optics as like a main tool, but I feel like all of us kind of, we blossomed a little later into the game. I know out West that's, you need them. You can't go hunting without them.
I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah.
You couldn't win without them. Can you break down, like, if a whitetail hunter that's not into optics, hasn't really thought about it as heavily as he did before this podcast, what would you recommend for a whitetail hunter for binos, for rangefinder? And, I mean, kind of, can you walk us through that and maybe guide our listeners a little bit through that process?
Yeah, I mean, there's different options, but I think, you know, just like there's a 3-9, you know, by 40 rifle scope that everybody, that's kind of like the, you know, the typical one, the go-to model over the years. But in binoculars, a 10x42.
Hey, Michael, can you get closer to your phone or something like that? It changed a little bit.
I'm trying.
There you go. Way better. Sorry.
Yeah, but in binoculars, a 10x42, generally speaking, I would just tell everybody, you know, unless you're hunting in really tight, really dense cover, you know, get a 10x42. I mean, it's the best thing. If you go out into open space, it works for you. If you're in closed quarters, you know, it'll still work for you. You know, it's just about having more magnification so that you can see those finer details. And that's really what it comes down to.
That's what we all run. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine most of you guys do. And if anybody's, like I said, if they're hunting really tight woodlots and stuff like that, that they're not looking more than, you know, 100 yards at the most, then I would say, well, go with an 8x42, because then, you know, you don't need the magnifications because everything's so close and allows you to see more as you're looking through the binocular because you're not magnifying everything so much. You're not zooming in so much. So,
before, like, a quick breakdown, can you describe or explain what the 8 and what the 42 means?
Thank you.
In case someone doesn't know what that means?
Yeah. Yeah, 8 power is a 8 times magnification. So your eye obviously is a 1x, no magnification. And if you throw those up, it's basically increasing, you know, your ability to see that 8 times. So so you're just basically zooming in on whatever you're looking at, basically, because you're getting closer. And as you go up in that number, it just allows you to see further out, you know, higher magnification. So, you know, you start talking about guys that want to do long range spotting and stuff, and, you know, if they use a binocular, they'll go up to a 15 power. You know, something like that, which is a lot. And the only downfall as you go up in the number is that it's harder to hold them steady, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you got to lean on something or whatever. So a 10 power, most people can hold a 10x42 pretty steady. Obviously, an 8's even easier. But once you get to 12s or 15s or anything above that, you want some kind of a solid rest generally that you can, you know, that you can hold it on so that you can not shake so much.
And you think a 15 power would like screw with your eyes a lot more too than like an 8 power, because it's trying to adjust for that 15 times magnification.
Yeah, but that's where you get into the optical design, like a prescription. So if you go out and get glasses or contacts or something like that, if you get a lousy, you know, prescription, yeah, then your eyes are doing all, you know, doing everything to try to adjust for that, right? And,
right.
Mm-hmm. And after a while, you get a headache, you get this eye strain, you get all those kinds of things. But if you get a good optical design, something that's really sharp and crisp and refined, you can sit there with two eyes and look through binoculars all day long. Now, when it comes down to a spotting scope, when you're looking through one channel, that can be, over time, that can be more challenging, because you just use one eye and you usually have the other eye shut, and, you know, right. People will wear a patch, or they'll put their hand over their eye or the bill of their hat or anything like that just to help with that. But generally speaking, you know, I think looking through a binocular with a good quality design is something that you can do all day long if it's, you know.
Well, I mean,
and that's really the difference in price, really, is as you go up or down in price point, it's just the refinement of that.
Right.
Optical design.
And before I got into playing around with like high end quality optics, I always heard spend as much on your optics or more than you do on like your firearm. You know, mostly you think scopes,
right.
You know, with.
Sure.
I mean, I think, is it fair to say Leupold is known for their scopes first?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're definitely known for our scopes. I mean, we make everything that mounts to a firearm in our factory here in Beaverton, which is kind of a suburb of Portland. And so that's certainly where it all started back in the 60s, as, you know, in the production of those things. But you're right. I mean, you know, nowadays you can get rifles that shoot quarter minute, half minute groups right out of the box, right? And you don't have to pay, you know, a custom rifle, you know, price. But you spend a lot more time behind your binoculars or your spotting scope than you do behind the rifle scope, right? You're locating everything, and if you don't have quality, then you're not going to find it. And if you can't find it, you can't shoot it.
Right.
So, you know, you want to make sure that your optics are there. And then, you know, obviously, if you find something that you really want to go after, then you throw up a scope, then it's got a crisp, clear image. And because you don't have a lot of time. Right, you want to be able to find it quick and take care of business.
Absolutely. You know, going to add too, when you talk about like the quality of an optic, when we were in South Dakota, so we look through our binos a lot hunting whitetails and stuff, but nothing like when we go out west. You know, when I hunted in Oregon last year with you guys, I lived through my binoculars.
Yep.
And yeah. I did, that's how we found everything we wanted to hunt. That's how you see if something's worth going after. It's how you glass, and when you're chilling out, you're looking through your glass the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're sitting relaxing, you're trying to spot something. Well, hunting antelope in South Dakota, same thing. You know, we're looking and we're glassing, and I don't know how many hours we logged through our Leupolds on that trip. But
shit done, because it was like, oh, there is that a goat out there, and immediately throw them binos up.
Yeah, that's how we lived through them. And I don't recall, I mean, it's a little different for us because we're not as used to living through them that heavily. Yeah.
Right.
But I don't ever really recall in like eye strain or something like that where we were out there hunting with our buddies from Buckstorm. They're all from South Dakota. They were on a sheep hunt the week previously. They had a buddy who drew a sheep tag, was lucky enough, and they went and scouted and helped them get on it. And they were talking about how they were looking through their glass
so much
for like 6 hours straight, and they run a different brand. And I'm kind of joking around, poking at them right now. I'm not like trying to put anybody down, but they complained about their eyes hurting and just kind of like at the end of the day, how exhausted they were. And I was like, oh, maybe if you just had better glass, you wouldn't, what's up?
Your eyes wouldn't hurt so much.
Leupold, what's up? No, I didn't give them any grief, but I just did that so yes, they would listen to this and be like, man, you suck. So
why you call us out like that?
Yeah. Why you gotta call us out like that? But that is a good, you know, quality optics, you know, I guess we'll prevent that. I'm a dude that's getting ready to go get glasses, and I'm scared of it. So,
bro, I've had them since second grade. You'll be fine.
Contacts, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Contacts. But, you know, I mean, like you said, if you can't spend all day behind them, then you don't have the right one, right? And, you just, like anything else, as you go up in price point and everything, you go up and find features and benefits and everything. And so, you know, if you're going to spend a lot of time behind glass, then, you know, you're better off, you know, stepping up. And, And, you know, I mean, all of our binos and spotters and rifle skinks, all that stuff is lifetime guarantee. So you're talking about a one-time buy, you know, and then you're covered. And so it's going to work for you. And, you know, it's easy for us to say spend more on your glass because, you know, we make it. But it's really true, you know, no matter.
Yeah.
It really proves out to be true.
Can you kind of break down what that means, like lifetime guarantee?
Yeah, I mean, so basically just, you know, it's a one-time purchase, and if there's any issues with it, if you, you know, if you drop it, if it, who knows? I mean, whatever. If there's any accidents, any kind of issues, anything that happens, it doesn't take much to throw off an optical design. I mean, you might, you know, you might drop something really hard and it'd be fine, and then you might drop it really hard again, and all of a sudden if a piece of glass inside there moves the slightest little bit, then things aren't lined up. And
yeah, you'll know real fast.
Yeah, then you're going to know. And so, you know, any of those kinds of things for quality and, you know, performance and you know, accidents and whatever. I mean, we started the lifetime guarantee back when we started making optics, you know, started as early as the 40s, you know, when they're doing water measuring equipment, surveying equipment and stuff. And so it's always been a part of Leupold, and it always will be.
That's super cool. And it's good to be like working with brands that provide that. Like HHA is one of the brands, a Wisconsin brand. So you, and I don't know if you shoot HHA or not, but they're the same way. Like if you drop it out of a tree stand and your sight takes all the fall, or you run it over with your truck, you just hit them
no
up
questions
and you're like,
ask you a new one.
Yeah, you're just like, hey, this happened. And they got your back on it, which is, yep. You know, it's worth spending money. It's easy for us to say that too, because we're partnered and it looks good if we promote it, right? But
right.
It is worth spending money on something that does that because, like you said, it's a one-time buy.
It's so, super refreshing to know that you have that in the back of your mind in case something does happen.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want it to happen, but in case it does happen,
well,
they got your back.
I find it rare if you back over your bow with your truck. Like if you set it on your truck tire and got in to do something and got distracted and you back over your bow and smash everything else on it, I have a hard time believing a bow company is going to send you a brand new bow because right. You ran it over with your truck.
Yeah.
We've seen it happen.
Yeah. But it's nice. Yeah, we have seen it happen. But it is nice to know that, you know, other brands do have your back with that. And if you invested in the right areas, you know, it's they're going to take care of you.
Yeah. And our goal with this thing is we got this warranty and we'll take care of it. But you know, our goal is that you don't have to use it.
Right.
Because, I mean, if you're out in the middle of nowhere on a hunt of a lifetime and your optics go down, Amazon Prime doesn't drop it in there for you. You know, you're not going to get it. And that's the last thing you want to have happen. I mean, you know, you were worried. You got out there and all of a sudden you had an issue with a boot, right? Can you imagine if that boot, you couldn't wear it anymore? I've seen guys where they wrap duct tape all around their foot and then they just spent the rest of the time trying to hunt with a foot with duct tape on it just because they didn't want to quit their hunt. So
right. Yeah, that's a good point, man. I've seen I'm not naming names, Michael, but I saw some spotters hit the dirt pretty hard on a hunt, and we all looked at each other like, oh shit, and it was fine. I ended up I killed my first mule deer by looking through that spotter for a while, judging what it was like last day of the hunt, judging whether or not I wanted to shoot it, and it worked fine. But yeah, it was one of those moments we all looked at each other like, oh no, that thing just smacked the ground and rolled for a little ways. And
they're not that fragile. I mean, obviously there's glass in there, but they go through, there's a lot of testing, including drop testing and impact testing, things like that. So they're not as fragile as everybody thinks, but you never know.
It seems that way, right? But like, you just worry about it. You invest.
Oh, yeah.
And there's, like you said, there's glass in it, and it's one of those things. Like I'm really protective about my Leupolds, my binos on there. I'm like, oh wait, give me some room here. I'm about to pull these babies out. Like, let you back up.
Back up a little bit.
Respect the space of my Leupolds.
I'm about some social distance.
Yeah. How about you take a picture for social media? Look at this. You know, I make people. I let them know that I've got some Leupolds. But no, I don't do that. But
you see these bad boys?
You see these bad boys? You got a pair of these? No, you don't. Yeah. But you should. No, I don't do that. But that would be a huge asshole move of me. But I might do that to one of my buddies this year just to do it.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, can you talk about some of the testing you guys run? I got to see it in person, and I don't know what I can and cannot talk about when I was there. But, like, you guys run your stuff through the ringer before it hits the market.
Yeah, you know, if you got environmental testing is obviously the big thing that really puts it to the test. And then that's where, you know, you have a heat chamber and you basically put products in there and you'll heat it up to 120 to 140 degrees and it'll sit there for a certain number of hours. And, you know, it'll just build up to that while it sits in this chamber, and then it'll sit there for a while. And then you'll start to run the temperature back down, and then you'll drop it down into the below zero ranges. I mean, depending on the products, it'll go down to 0, 20 below, 40 below, and they'll do the same thing. And so, and then periodically, as they're testing it on all those different temperature ranges, you know, they're reaching in there and they're trying to see if everything still functions correctly. And if you can still turn the magnification, if you can adjust the focus, if you can do all of those things, because you want it to be able to function, you know, depending on where you're hunting. Because not everybody hunts where it's, you know, 45 degrees out and blue sky sunshine or anything.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And so they'll do that. So you got all those environmental tests, and then we'll do some variety of different drop tests, you know, from different heights, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 feet, those kinds of things. And then, or you'll simulate a recoil, you know, on a huge gun. There's, you know, 375 H&H is always stuff that kicks like a mule. And so they'll simulate recoil and run the scopes through tens of thousands of tests, impact tests, to make sure that everything stays intact and still works. And there's been a lot of tests against competitors where competitor products kind of start falling apart before they can, you know, finish the test. So, you know, it goes through the gamut, and we beat the heck out of it because, like I said, we want to make sure you don't have to use the warranty.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What's funny about that is I don't have a ton of firearm experience when it comes to hunting, you know.
I don't think any of us do here, really.
The first animal I ever shot with a rifle was on that hunt in Oregon with you guys, which I really did enjoy it, actually. I thought it was really fun. And that rifle I shot was, oh, smooth as butter, man. But, you know, I'm used to shooting, like, muzzle loaders at home, yeah, and 12 gauges and shit like that. Right. Well, I always remember being younger. It's like, oh, the shotgun knocked the scope off because all the recoil. Like, that might just be because we had cheap stuff when I was growing. Like, I was young.
Probably tossing around.
Yeah, you know, just being shotgun unnecessary with it. I don't know. I just remember that being in the conversation with my dad and some of the older guys I hunted with. Like, oh, yeah, you shoot that shotgun enough, it'll knock the side off. Which I'm like, thinking back now, it's like, it might have just been we had cheap stuff, you know, and that was just part of it.
Or just deer camp where they're telling you that shit.
Or we just didn't know any better, right, and we just sucked at shooting. I don't know what it was, but it's just kind of growing up. That's what I remember when it comes to, like, optics on firearms, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely true. I'm sure there was many cases where that was the case, and then there's other examples where, you know, a guy leans it up against a tree and it falls over, and next thing you know, it's not shooting straight and all those things. And so everybody starts thinking that everything is that fragile. And when you get a quality product, it's not nearly as fragile as examples like that. So, you know, people put it to the test and we make sure that it performs.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, you guys stand behind a quality product and we're proud to be a part of it with you guys. So we do appreciate that, man. And it was cool to get the phone call from you, kind of believing in us and seeing what we do and inviting me on that hunt and everything. So I am thankful for the partnership and just being good people over there. It's been pretty awesome.
Well, likewise. I mean, we enjoy just kind of hanging out with you guys and talking to you guys and everything. And it's always good to, you know, especially for me to kind of go back to my roots a little bit. So I love that.
Yeah, I know. You and I were talking. We got to get you out to the Wisconsin Deer Classic or something, get you back in the old home state there, if you will, and kind of shoot the shit, drink a couple good Midwestern beers, and
hang out with us for a weekend.
Yeah, hang out with us for a weekend.
I don't know if you're ready for that, but
you'll be like, man, I am higher class than I thought.
I don't think so.
This is why I left Wisconsin.
He is from Wisconsin. We know how them guys can be, too.
That's the craziest show of the year is Madison.
Yep.
Yeah, we tried to do that last year, first week of April, and obviously it didn't work out. But it's certainly on my calendar again for this year, so we'll make it happen.
Well, we got a spot for you in the booth, man. Come hang out. We'll maybe we can get some loophole binos and some rangefinders on the booth and let people play with them a little bit. And
absolutely.
Kind of wake up to the calling there. But no, I mean, so last time we tried to podcast and you guys were having an apocalypse out there.
a little bit of everything going on.
Yeah. We were leaving for our goat camp, and you were leaving for an elk camp. like the same day and getting back the same day, actually. So this kind of worked out to reschedule this. Maybe tell us a little bit about that, because I know a lot of our listeners are elk hungry, or it's at least on their radar, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're fortunate here that we've got two different species of elk. You know, if you want to go on the other side of the mountain, if you want to go east, you can go after Rocky Mountain elk. And if you want to stay here on the west side on the coast range, you can go after Roosevelt elk, which is fun. And the big difference is that you're in the jungle out here on the west side compared to what you normally see. Typical Colorado, Utah, you know, Wyoming out there on the east side. But yeah, most of the time I chase the rosies out here, and it's not very far from where I live, actually, you know, a little over an hour away. So it's pretty quick to get there. But yeah, it was a good time. I think I had one of the more memorable stock scenarios play out for me, which is great, because I was by myself. Normally I got a coworker that I hunt with quite a bit and everything, and he had tagged out the week prior.
Oh, cool.
We were hunting together, which was awesome. So we had one in the books, and we were trying to get that other one going, and they had already closed the whole state from hunting and access. They closed it for almost 10 days. And so everybody was really nervous that it wouldn't open back up during the so-called peak period. It's about a month-long season, so for archery.
Oh, short then for archery.
Yeah. So we were worried that they weren't going to open it back up when we had it pegged for the, you know, the rut and everything like that. But thankfully they did. They opened it up on a Wednesday, and I killed my bull on Thursday.
Perfect.
Afternoon. Yeah.
No kidding. So what is the main difference? And I don't know how into elk you are, but like so a Roosevelt versus like a Rocky Mountain, like is there a big size difference? Is one more, you know,
that's a good question,
more interactive with calling? How does that all work?
Yeah, generally a Rosie's gonna be a larger body. It's gonna be a smaller antler.
Oh really? I didn't expect that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of the other way around, right? And so, you know, if you got a 300 class Rosie, I mean, you're talking bull of a lifetime, you know. There's a lot of Rockies out there that are 300 and well above 300. So that's the biggest difference, you know. And then the other thing is, you know, the antlers out here, because they're rubbing on cedars and alders and stuff like that, the antlers are like a really kind of a chocolate brown kind of rust color.
Nice.
So it's a really cool color, you know, and then they get those white tips from rubs and stuff. And so it's pretty cool. But as far as being vocal, I would say that generally they're less vocal than the Rockies. But it also could be that you just can't hear them as well because they're in these deep canyons that are heavily, you know, wooded and ferns that are 4 or 5 feet tall and stuff. And so sometimes you just can't hear them unless you're closer. So sound carries a lot more, you know, out in Rocky Mountain elk country. So,
right.
But yeah, we still, you know, everybody still tries to call and locate and everything like that. And, you know, you just can't see as far. And, you know, so a lot of times with the timber companies and the state forests and stuff, wherever there is any logging and clear cuts and stuff, what that does is that just creates food for these elk. You know, they prefer to eat out in those cuts with new growth and everything. And so everything kind of starts from checking out the clear cuts and then, you know, and then see if you can either lure the bull out of the timber or you got to go in the timber after him. So it's just one way or the other.
Very cool. So you were hunting one full day or two? It'd be your second day?
Well, I had hunted a couple of weekends, you know, long weekends prior to that. Just didn't get it done on my side. And we were in elk, I think, pretty much every day that we were out. And like I said, the week before, a couple of days, probably maybe 4 or 5 days before the fire started, my coworker, he knocked down a bull. And so we were out there doing it then, but I'd say on the average this year, probably it was only about 8 days before I, 7 or 8 days before I tagged out. But
that's awesome, man.
A lot of guys will hunt a lot more than that. And just, you know, just depends on the luck, I guess.
Yeah, so how'd you find your bull? Was he in one of those clear cuts, or did you have to go in deep after him?
Actually, I did find him in a cut. Well, I didn't see him in the cut until he showed up in there. But, you know, it's funny. I stayed out there and I slept in the back of my truck, you know, and I was going to walk out in old. There's lots of old logging roads all over the place. And some of them are really old that they're all grown over with grass and everything like that. And so those are the ones you kind of tend to want to hang around a little bit, you know. I had walked out one of those at first, not even first light, really. And I had to get back to my truck by 9 a.m. because I had a conference call, believe it or not. So, you know, and of course, on the way back to my truck, I bump an elk, you know, in the timber, but it's still so dark I couldn't tell what it was other than a blonde body. You know, you couldn't see their heads because their heads are so dark.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got back, I do my conference call, and I'm on the corner of this clear cut, and I'm thinking, well, before I walk back into the timber, I'm going to just look down over this clear cut and see if there's anything out there. Well, you know, went up there and boom, you know, I saw two blonde bodies across the clear cut. And by the time I could throw up my binos, I saw that one was a spike, which aren't legal in that unit. And then the other one, I didn't know what it was. It went into the timber on the far side before I could see it. So then you're sitting there and you're going, and then, well, there's one, there's always more, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, so I'm sitting there trying to think like, okay, this is probably where they went. I'm looking on my app, you know, and trying to figure out what it looks like. If there's a way I can slip in there, and I'm thinking, I can't get in there. And next thing you know, this started coming back out. And cow after cow after calf, and then finally the bull comes out. And so then the game's on, right? And so, you know, this clear cut is kind of a bowl shaped. And so they're either going to swing around and come underneath me right into the timber, or they're going to go up and over and then cross over into the timber. So I'm sitting there watching and waiting. At what point do I take off? They're probably, I don't know, maybe 250, 300 yards away or something like that.
So yeah.
Once I figure out which way they're going, then I throw off my pack to try to get as small as possible. So there comes in handy being small.
Yeah, and the Westie power comes alive. Yeah.
Until you can't find your pack again.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. And then, but anyway, I threw it off and I ran up there and I was trying to head them off before they could see my truck or before they headed out in the direction. And one thing led to another and, you know, they went into the timber. I couldn't get them. So then I kind of swung a big circle. I ran back past my truck. I ran down a ravine where they couldn't see me, you know, and I was hoping they were going to come side hill towards me. And eventually that's what happened. They just kind of started working side hill, and because the ferns are so tall in that particular area, by the time I got down on my hands and knees, the ferns were head high. So I just hunkered down in the ferns and watched all the cows and calves and the spike feed above me 15 to 20 yards away and waited for the bull to come following up through there and stuck an arrow in him. I think he was probably 16, 17 yards.
No kidding.
That's crazy.
Yeah. On top of you.
Yeah. Yeah, and he took two steps and stood there. I mean, he had no idea what happened. The rest of the herd, they just kept slowly feeding past me. They didn't know, the wind was working for me. So basically, since they didn't see me or anything like that, they had no idea. And
no kidding.
I just basically stood there in the ferns on my knees for what felt like an hour until he finally, you know, tipped over. So
no, how far was he from you when he tipped over?
16 yards.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man, that had to have been awesome.
Heavy nerve wracking as hell.
Well, I'm watching this play out. This whole scenario, obviously, I did the short version, but this whole scenario ended up going about a little over 2 hours, you know?
Yeah.
And so you're watching it, and then they start coming your direction, and you start getting all excited, you know. Then you're like, all right, just calm down.
Yeah.
And the heart rate's going up and then back down and then up and then back down. And, yeah, it was crazy. And then one of the cows looked like it was going to feed side hill right to me. And I thought, oh, no, I'm just going to get busted right when the bull's coming up. And thankfully, he came up from below her enough that she bumped up the hill further because they're always trying to – he's always pushing them, right? And so they kind of avoid the bull until it's time. And so luckily he pushed it uphill and he stood there for a second and I was able to do going in and actually went past through, so it was great.
That's kick-ass. That's probably why he didn't know what hit him. He was just kind of like, yeah. Well, what the hell was that? And a lot of people don't realize that, especially non-hunters. They don't understand, like, an arrow can zip clean through like butter through an animal, and they don't even know until they start feeling drunk.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
and he's just standing there, you know, and he's looking around, and he could, you know, he doesn't know. He's like, all of a sudden, I don't feel very good. And in the meantime, all the other ones are just going by him, and they're not paying any attention to him. And next thing you know, he doesn't feel good, and he just lays down, and then it's over with.
What was your reaction after that?
Well, it was relief for sure, you know, because I was kind of bouncing around like a pinball on the side of that in the timber there, because I was like, if they go below me, I can't be too high. So if they go below me, I can get a shot at them down there. And if they go above me, I need to be where I can get a shot there, because, you know, so I was like back and forth. And at the same time, I'm trying to look at all of them to make sure none of them somehow see me moving. And, because there's a lot of eyeballs looking around. There's a couple times I thought I was busted, but, you know, thankfully it was a calf, and after a while they just don't know what they thought they saw, and they just, you know, go about doing their business after a little bit. But yeah, you know, the whole time you're doing this, I'm thinking it's not going to happen, you know, so I'm not getting my hopes up, but I'm doing everything I can to make it happen. But that's how I guess in my own mind, that's how I try to stay as calm as I can be. And, you know, it's not going to happen until it happens, right? I just felt like they were going to come towards me, and I just did everything I could to make sure that if they did, that I would have a shot, and thankfully it played out for me. So, yeah, it's a great feeling, you know, it's a great feeling, because to be that close to all those eyes and everything.
I was going to say, I'd be losing my mind, like, when the first come in, you're like, oh, it's happening, like. Yeah, isn't coming behind.
Or you're
going to
get trampled. You're just tucked in a fern, and they give a big cow to stomple you out.
Or if one smells it, they're out of there like that. You know, it's just crazy how sometimes them stars just align, and everything works out perfectly the way you think it's going to work.
And you talk about trampling. You know, I mean, there were a couple of weeks prior to that, in the very opening weekend, there was a story here in Oregon where a hunter. He had arrowed one, and he didn't kill it, and so he and the landowner came back the next day to try to locate it, and he walked up on it, and it was still alive, and it jumped up, and it just charged, just reacted, I guess, and it ended up goring him and killed him.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So you got that run through your mind as you're sitting here in these ferns, too, probably.
Yeah. I'm going. These ferns aren't going to stop anything.
Hell no.
So when I thought he was finally, you know, done and he had died, I was like, oh gosh, okay, now I'm going to do a big circle around him to make sure. And so I get up and I start tiptoeing and going as quiet as I can, but I'm doing a circle. But I mean, he was 5 yards from me by the time I started doing the circle, and I still couldn't see him.
Oh, because it's so thick.
Yeah, so I was just like, and then I finally got around behind him where I could grab a branch off the ground and give him a good jab, and, you know, by that time I saw that he wasn't breathing, but, you know, I wanted to make sure.
Especially by yourself, man. I mean, there's nothing, like, if one of us was with you, I'd be like, hey, what do you do if one gets up? You can't stop it.
That's even scary with a whitetail, you know, we all do that. You kind of give him a little jab before you go in, but, animal that big, like an elk.
Well, imagine, like, a big, heavy, good grief. Big, mature, heavy whitetail in Iowa, Illinois, you know, at the most is going to be in that 300-pound range, which is a huge animal.
Right.
Right.
And I don't know what the Roosevelts get to, 600-700 pounds, 800 pounds, I don't know.
So generally, if you're talking about a mature boy, he's going to be in at 800 to 1,000. You know?
Whoa.
And then,
wow.
Yeah. And then this one was a what we call raghorn. So he was kind of like, I guess he'd be in his mid-20s to mid-30s, you know, by human standards. And so he, you know, he was probably more of the Rocky Mountain size, you know, 600-700 pounds kind of thing. But still, that's a lot coming at you, and you can't do much about it.
2 to 3 times more than a really nice-sized whitetail would be.
Every now and again, I think maybe once a year, you always see, like, photos or whatever of a guy who went and grabbed a whitetail, and the whitetail, like, swung its head up and then just, like, lays the dude open, you know, with the tines or whatever, which... That's what nightmares are made of. One, it would scare the living hell out of you, but it would just not be a good time to take a G2 to the face. But
no.
Yeah, I can't imagine walking up on a 700 to 1,000 pound animal
And then it gets up.
Yeah, then it gets up. It it'd be the pucker factor be really real.
Be really tight.
Well, it's still alive and it's kind of walking towards you too, and you're just like, there's a lot here between me and a sharp stick and you with, you know, sharp antlers.
Right, yeah, no kidding. Whenever I think about situations like that, I always think back to that Fred Eichler video where he's in that raft and that brown bear charges him. I don't remember where he's at. He's like, you couldn't get a grease BB in my ass with a hammer. I think about that every time like one of these situations comes about because, you know,
it's
true.
You go into legitimate wilderness fight or flight. It's you and Mother Nature, and what are you going to do?
Yeah. And all those things are rushing through your head as it gets closer and closer and closer to you, you know. And to be honest with you, I mean, even if it was a cow, it'd still be an issue. I mean, if I had a cow elk come after me, you know, that's still going to be a big problem. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, yeah. It's like, a beef cow. You got a beef cow coming at you. You better run zig and zag and hop a fence and do whatever. You know, you're out there with elk and there ain't no fence to get across. You got to avoid getting stomped out by Mrs. Mama there. Stomp you out with her hooves. Not a good time.
Her hooves.
Yeah. We all see that with whitetails, with all kinds of deer and elk. They'll rear up on those back legs and start slapping at you with those front legs. Yeah. That's not a good
guarantee. Hit harder than any boxer that's going to punch you.
Oh, yeah. Not good.
It is scary. But, you know, I think that's a thing that gets looked past a little bit, like the danger factor. You know, not so much with whitetails, but you know, elk are big animals. You see, like, moose charging people a lot on TV. Bears, a different breed, you know. It's bow hunting is it's a different level, man. It's a close game, especially when you're 15 yards, man. And you got a wounded 800-pound animal right there. It's pretty inspiring, man. I'm pretty jealous. It's pretty cool.
Super jealous about that.
It's something that never gets old, that's for sure. But, you know, I mean, I was listening to your podcast about the bear hunt that you did, and you were talking about different guys, you know, going out to their stand in the dark and, you know, wondering if they should be doing that and everything. And, you know, your mind starts to really kind of do flips and stuff and mess with you in those scenarios. And so, that's something you got to try to fight to overcome, that's for sure.
Definitely not the top of the food chain at that point.
Not out west, man. It's a different ballgame. I'm cool with walking into the woods in the dark here, you know.
Yeah, like, no problem. Oh, yeah.
Scariest thing I'm going to run into is, you know, another person, whatever.
Yeah.
No, a turkey flying out of a tree. You about shit your pants when that happens.
That's pretty horrifying.
A turkey or a grouse taking off right at your feet.
Kick up a pheasant really puckers you up, too.
Yeah. But, you know, you're not going to get gored or mauled to death by a turkey or a pheasant. So I'll take it any day.
Might get a spur to the leg.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man, for coming on, and we finally got it done, and thanks for sharing that elk story. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, that was a great time, and it's always fun to talk about because it's fun to relive like it is anything else, you know, those kind of hunt camp stories and stuff, so that'll be one I'll remember for a while.
Well, absolutely. If the Wisconsin show actually happens, we'll expect you to be there. You're more than welcome to hang out with our crew the entire time if you can hang on.
You have no choice. You will be there.
Yeah. You will we got a spot. We'll have a warm seat for you in the booth, and we can we'll play with some optics and do some podcasts and I guess have a few beers the Wisconsin way, which whatever way that is.
Yeah, well,
a lot of them.
Yeah, I'll show you.
I think the Wisconsin way is a lot of them.
Yeah, it's just like, we're going to drink like Wisconsin's. A lot of beers.
A lot of them.
I think you guys know how to do it.
We're familiar. We're familiar with the process.
I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Been to Wisconsin a couple times.
You'd think when we do trade shows that we're like an old rock band, the way we go about it. So we're on tour.
It's been around for a while. Right.
We're on tour right now. We're celebrating.
Yeah.
You got the look. That's good.
We just got to grow our hair out a little longer. Had the 80s hair band. But now we're always that crew that ends up having like 3 to 4 coolers full of Busch Light somehow magically got its way into our booth. I don't know how it happens. But
we don't do it.
And it's gotten to the point where we have listeners bring us cases of beer into the show in backpacks. And they're like,
hey, that's loyalty there.
It is loyalty.
Right or die.
Yeah. It's like, hey, I got you this case of beer, but here's the catch. You got to drink one with me. I'm like, no, I can't. Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, hey, twist my arm.
Yeah.
It's 8 in the morning. All right.
Crazy how much a case of beer brightens your day, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Those are going to be long days, you know? As much as it's fun to talk to everybody, they're still long days. So it's always nice to have something to kind of help you along.
Social lubricant, if you will.
There you go. That's it.
Well, thanks, man, so much. Anything you want to close with? Anything you want to say to our listeners?
No, I just look forward to getting back there and, you know, hanging out with you guys and being able to talk to some people face-to-face. I listen to so many guys on your podcast and everything from the area and stuff, so it'll be fun to get back and actually meet these guys and share some more stories, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. We're looking forward to it, man. Looking forward to getting together. We appreciate the partnership. We appreciate you giving us a chance and inviting us out to do some cool shit, and we're looking forward to the future, man.
Absolutely. We'll have a good time together.
So, all right. Well, I think that closes it up. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.